Hello and welcome to episode 20 of Calder's Calling, the Calder Times flagship podcast and your premier podcast destination for everything surrounding the American Hockey League. I'm Jay Foster. I'm joined today by one of my co-hosts, Corey Swartz. Dina Weinheimer is day-to-day with an illness this week, but she will be back next week. Before we kick things off over here, if you're not already subscribed to us on your favorite podcast platform or YouTube, go ahead and do that now. If you're currently watching on YouTube, like, share, leave a comment. And if you are subscribed, you're going to get every episode straight into your feed. So really, it just cuts out the middleman here. I'd also like to thank our show sponsor, Document Doctors. While not on the ice, they can help you and your business optimize and increase your revenue and profits to a bigger slice. Check out documentdoctorsllc.com. And don't forget to mention that the Calder Times sent you to them. Corey, let's start off with, we're doing a little bit of a playoff heavy episode here. So why don't we start off with some teams that have officially clinched their spots in the Calder Cup playoffs, despite Calder's Calling's best effort to jinx them.
Yeah, absolutely. So despite our best efforts to mess these two teams up here, the Milwaukee Admirals and the Coachella Valley Firebirds became the latest teams, numbers 2 and 3, to clinch spots in the Calder Cup playoffs. They're the first to clinch in both their divisions, that being the Central Division for Milwaukee and the Pacific for Coachella Valley. And it's no coincidence that they're both the leaders in those two divisions. So we have a few more teams locking in their berths in the playoffs here, which is it's crazy to think of. This is the last episode for the month of March, and we're just going to be sailing right along to the playoffs here sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think by the time we record next week, there's going to be... I'm going to go ahead and say I think another three teams will have clinched playoff spots by then, just because it's basically impossible for them not to. We're going to talk about that in a little bit later on. I want to talk about kind of the playoff race for a bunch of teams in my little segment. But we have another NHL debut. An AHL forward made his NHL debut on Tuesday night. Josh Doan from the Tucson Roadrunners. Obviously, the son of our Phoenix Coyotes great, Shane Doan. Still feels weird that Shane Doan has a son that's old enough to play in the NHL. It makes me feel very old. But made his NHL debut on Tuesday night for the Arizona Coyotes. And much to the joy of his family in attendance, and much to my disappointment because he was playing against the Blue Jackets, Josh Doan scored 2 goals. Which, you know, that's a pretty tidy little NHL debut. He's been great for the Roadrunners this season, and I think he's going to be a lot of fun to watch in the playoffs. On that note, there was a second NHL debut in that same game, actually. James Malatesta of the Cleveland Monsters made his NHL debut, did not score a goal, unfortunately, but did have a team-high 8 hits and got in a fight. So he was definitely on the score sheet, just in different parts of the score sheet to Josh Doan. So two very fun NHL debuts in the same game, which is always fun to watch.
It's always neat to have 2 rookie laps in the same game, honestly.
Yeah. Just 2 players doing circles on the ice. It's fine.
Exactly. Yeah, it's supposed to confuse the fans a little bit. But switching to more AHL-oriented action, we have Ontario Reign forward Akil Thomas was named the Howie's Hockey Tape AHL Player of the Week for the period ending March 24th. Thomas tallied 4 goals and 2 assists in a perfect 3-0 weekend for the Ontario Reign, who are now only 2 points out of as high as 2nd place in the Pacific Division. So it's wild to see the Pacific. I know we're going to touch on this a little bit more in your segment, Jay, but what a difference a good weekend can make at this point in the playoff push, where it's still just this wide open that you can see such dramatic increases in fortunes for teams. Now, obviously, the Pacific, Coachella Valley is pretty far and away the top dog right now in that division. But, certainly fighting for home ice advantage in the play-in round, first round, is huge at this point in the stage of the battle.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm just going to pull up the playoff primer to make sure that I'm getting this right, but I believe 3 teams in the Pacific actually get a first round bye. I'm incorrect. Only 1 of them. So only Coachella Valley right now. But yeah, that home ice advantage, that playoff seeding is all important. Again, we're going to get into this in a minute, but the Pacific Division is really interesting because the seven playoff spots are basically decided. Like seventh place right now, their magic number is 9. Eighth place in the Pacific, their magic number is 34. That's how much of a gap there is here. But between the second seed and the seventh seed, there is only 7 points. So there's going to be a lot of movement in the Pacific Division's top seven teams before this season is over, I think. We're going to go back. We're going to touch on one more NHL debut. Wilkes-Barre Scranton's Jackson Ivany made his NHL debut on March 22nd against the Dallas Stars. Did not score 2 goals, unlike Josh Doan, but became another one in a long list of AHL players this season to make their NHL debuts.
It is truly debut season, and we're here for it, always. Speaking of debuts, we have a little bit of a less typical kind of debut that's possibly in the works here, but rumor has it that prospect goaltender Alexei Kolosov will be making his way from Russia to join the Philadelphia Flyers and potentially make his AHL debut with the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Kolosov's season in the KHL recently came to an end with Dynamo Minsk. You know, he's a highly regarded draft pick of the Flyers in net. He'll look to make an immediate impact with the Phantoms, who, as we know, the Flyers organization is very beleaguered with goaltenders right now. You know, it's almost to the point where you or I could put on the pads and maybe look for to be a viable option in net in Philadelphia at times, just the way it's gone here. So I know Flyers fans being me, are salivating at potentially having a very good goaltender make his debut to the AHL and, you know, hopefully work his way up from there, since that's probably one of the biggest needs for the Flyers right now is to have a goaltender that figures it out.
Yeah, there was a long time there where goaltending, Philadelphia was where goaltending went to die. And they kind of figured it out a little bit. They're in kind of dire straits with goaltending again this season. It's been kind of up and down. But Kolosov is it's a really interesting player, and I'm excited to watch him. And if Lehigh Valley ends up making the playoffs, I think Kolosov is going to be a big piece for them. So that's going to be really fun to watch. Speaking of big pieces, let's talk about our three stars of the week. Dina, obviously not here, but she did provide a star that we'll get to at the end. But Corey, why don't you start us off with your star of the week this week?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have the benefit of recording this podcast a day later than what we normally do. So I am able to pick on Georgi Mrkulov a little bit more. And listen, the only way to earn one of my three stars is to beat the Bears. And that's exactly what the Providence Bruins did on Tuesday. So Mrkulov is, in my opinion, more than deserving of the nod for my star this week. He's been on a tear this week, or, you know, here recently, just for the Bruins. I mean, large part of their success, as, you know, you couldn't expect of him, he had 4 goals and 5 assists in his last 7 games. And, you know, kind of sneaky, I would say. He's kind of sneaked his way up into second place in AHL point scoring as of this week. And, you know, adding another couple of points yesterday against the Bears really helps his, you know, his continued climb in the AHL standing. So Providence kind of coming out of nowhere. He's been a huge part of their success for quite some time. I believe I'm remembering correctly, he spent some time up with Boston, perhaps as well on the injured list at different points here. Now that he's settled in, is just playing consistently with Providence. You know, he's right back up to his scoring form. And, you know, it's no surprise to me that he's back amongst the AHL leaders.
Yeah, 100%. He's one of those guys that I kind of checked in on him a couple of weeks ago and then checked on him again as we were doing some prep for this podcast and was like, oh, hey, he sure is, like you said, second to the AHL in scoring after just kind of appearing out of nowhere. I am going both against type and also playing into type by choosing a goalie. I know everyone is shocked, but I am playing the role of Corey in this week's three stars by choosing a Hershey Bear. And my star of the week is Hunter Shepherd, who I feel like has not been getting as much airtime on this podcast and also just in general as Clay Stevenson, because obviously Clay Stevenson having a heck of a rookie season for them. But Hunter Shepherd has very quietly been just as excellent as Clay Stevenson, I believe, is leading the league in save percentage right now with a 923, and is currently back-to-back shutouts for the Hershey Bears this week, one against Hartford on Sunday, and then another one against Cleveland on the Friday just gone. 46 shots faced in total, zero goals allowed. So in my for my money, that is good enough for a star of the game. And I think it's going to be interesting. Who do you actually? Maybe we'll talk about that in a later segment, maybe. But like, the Hershey Bears are going to have a decision to make when it comes to choosing a goalie for the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I do agree with everything you said there. I don't think Shepard got enough attention this season. You know, Calder Cup MVP, all those great nods that he got last season. And it's easy to forget he had a bit of a slower start to the season than Stevenson did. But, you know, has really kind of risen into form. You know, I don't think it was any question if he would rise into form. I think it was only a question of when he would, you know, truly get into his form. And, you know, it's important to remember in my mind that, you know, he's been the backbone of a lot of Hershey wins. I mean, you look at the games in Cleveland, those are not easy games by any stretch. The Bears kind of had to wake up in a sense and, you know, play some better hockey. And, you know, both Stevenson and, you know, Shepard had to be good. And they've been just kind of alternating starts here recently. So, you know, for my money, Shepard's been the better of the two goaltenders. And you expected, you know, Stevenson to maybe even out just a little bit. But, you know, when I say even out, I still want to make it known that, you know, both of these guys are the only two goaltenders in the AHL to have below two goals against averages here. And, you know, obviously still the tops in terms of save percentages and all that good stuff. So, you know, there's still like, you know, it is literally an example of like, you know, you could pick either goaltender and be just as fine, I think. You know, the Bears have confidence in them. Their defense has been great. They already set a new franchise record for the Bears. Not an easy feat to do with, you know, 86 years of history behind it, with 11 shutouts combined between the goaltenders this season. Juha Latola has done a great job as the goaltending coach with two of them in terms of managing and, you know, working with them and all that good stuff. I would say it's Shepard's crease to start the postseason, though. And much as, you know, Stevenson deserves that look, you know, Shep's your guy. He's the guy that went to he made that big save on Carson Terinski shorthanded to keep the Bears in game 7 of the finals. The Bears go on to, you know, win on Mike Vecchione's goal.
I was waiting for Mike Vecchione to make an appearance in
my segue into the bobblehead from Tuesday night, because I am just immensely happy with this product. It is fantastic. Well worth the wait in line for, of course. But, you know, he's your guy. I mean, as long as Shepard's here, I think he's the guy at this point. He's earned that. His recent play has earned that. He's been fantastic. And, you know, to your point, it's going to be a great question, but I think it's ultimately going to be Shepard's job to lose at that point.
Yeah, it's very much like, and we'll move on from Shepard here in a second, but it's very much like, okay, so Shepard loses the crease for whatever reason, maybe has a couple of bad games. Well, the guy that's replacing him has a 925 save percentage this season and is having arguably, like, could arguably be rookie of the year in the AHL for me. So it's really just an embarrassment of riches in the Hershey Bears crease this season, which is really frustrating for someone who is not a Hershey Bears fan.
Yeah, that's the term that's been thrown around a little bit at times, has been an embarrassment of riches. And I love that term, because it's just so rare that you get to have two goaltenders in that caliber. So major props to Hunter Shepard. Speaking of bobbleheads, if it weren't across my apartment right now, I would go and retrieve my Hunter Shepard bobblehead just to put for this occasion.
You have a different bobblehead every episode, just like...
Well, I could probably make that happen. I have several just on my desk right now. So, you know... Maybe I'll do that sometimes. I'll just keep rotating bobbleheads when I'm not talking here to amuse the audience. But so Dina's not here, but Dina submitted a candidate for 3 stars, which we love to see. And I'm a little shocked because she picked this one that I didn't even consider going into it. But she picked on Lehigh Valley Phantoms Adam Brooks as her star. Brooks is obviously a center. His stat line doesn't pop out at you necessarily. He has just 9 goals and 10 assists, 19 points in 37 games for the Phantoms. But he's been on an absolute heater here of recent. He has points in, I believe, 5 straight games. But, like, we'll dissect the stats here a little bit. that leads to 5 goals and 5 assists in that span. So, you know, 10 points in, I believe, 5 games here, which is fantastic. So he's currently on 4 consecutive games with a goal for Lehigh Valley. He had a game on March 16th against Providence where he had 2 goals and 3 assists. So 5 of his points came in just 1 game for the Phantoms. His success is going to be Lehigh Valley's success as they continue to push for the last place playoff space that they're hanging on to by a thread in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, we're going to get into that in just a second here, because I do want to talk about all of the interesting playoff races that are kind of coming out as the season winds to a close here. But before we do that, I do have to tell you guys all about one of our sponsors, and that is Document Doctors. Is your business growing beyond the four walls of your office? As businesses grow, so do the challenges of keeping people trained, safe, and supportive. Document Doctors is a proud sponsor of the Call to Calling podcast and the Call to Times, and they offer affordable solutions to help optimize your business and to keep good times rolling. They offer content-focused solutions such as training document creation, back office process optimization, policy and procedure development, and much, much more. Support us, support the podcast, and support the Call to Times by visiting them at documentdoctorsllc.com. And don't forget to mention us when talking to their team of contentologists. Shop and support small businesses today. Once again, that is documentdoctorsllc.com, and tell them Calder's Calling sent you. And let's talk about the playoffs, because I have spent a bunch of time today looking at the playoff primer on the AHL.com, which is just a wonderful, wonderful resource for anyone who cares even a little bit about the AHL. They update it every day, and it gives you who's made it, who's going to make it, who's been eliminated, that day's matchups, and clinching scenarios, things like that. It's really, really great. I spend a lot of time looking at it these days because I'm trying to find a way how I can, like, will the San Jose Barracuda into a playoff spot? And the answer is I don't think I can, because they have 11 games left and they are currently 19 points behind the 7th place team, the Abbotsford Canucks. So they would have to win every single game, and the 3 teams ahead of them would have to lose every single game for them to play the playoffs, which, you know, stranger things have happened, but we're not here to talk about the Barracuda. What I want to talk about kind of first of all is just how stupid the North Division is, in that the North Division's number one seed, Syracuse Crunch, has a magic number right now of 9 to clinch the playoffs. That is the same magic number as the 7th place team in the Pacific. The North Division is fully bonkers. Every single team has an above 500 save percentage. And then you go to the Central Division, and the Manitoba Moose, currently in that last playoff spot, have a 475 playoff points percentage. So, like, I understand that this is how the playoffs work in the AHL, and I'm not, like, super mad about it, but, like, it is truly, truly wild to look at some teams and be like, okay, you're going to finish ahead of this team in the standings and miss the playoffs. Looking specifically at the Belleville Senators, who have 66 points this season, which is more points than, again, the Rockford IceHogs, the Texas Stars, and the Manitoba Moose, who are all in playoff spots in the Central. The Atlantic is just as weird, but they're a little bit more stretched out. Like, the only really interesting race, I think, is Lehigh Valley and Springfield, who are separated by 1 point in the standings. Springfield has a game in hand. They're 1 point behind Lehigh Valley. So that, I think, is going to be a race that continues all the way up to the finish line, as opposed to the Pacific, which I kind of talked about a little bit earlier on in this episode, where the 7 teams that are going to make the playoffs are there already. They haven't officially clinched. Coachella Valley has clinched, and then respectively, Tucson, Colorado, Ontario, Bakersfield, Calgary, and Abbotsford have magic numbers of 1, 3, 4, 7, 7, and 9. The 8th place team has a magic number of 34. So I feel like for Henderson, which is that 8th place team, to make the playoffs, something is going to have to go really, really, really wrong. And again, that must be so annoying for a team. Like, again, like I said, the seventh seed in the Pacific right now has a lower magic number than, or the same magic number as the first place in the North. There's just, I love AHL playoffs, I think, for this reason specifically, because you do get these just complete, like, bug nut situation of, we don't know who's going to make the playoffs until the final day. Like, there's only three teams out of the 22 that make it, I believe, if I can do math on the fly. Only three out of the 22 teams have clinched so far. There's probably going to be a few more that have clinched by the time we record again next week. Providence has a magic number of 1. Grand Rapids has a magic number of 2. Tucson, 1. Colorado, 3. Ontario, 4. So, like, I would expect all of those guys to clinch pretty soon. In terms of clinching scenarios, Grand Rapids actually might have clinched. All these three teams might have clinched by the time you listen to this podcast, actually. Grand Rapids clinches a playoff berth if they beat Cleveland, who they play tonight, or if Chicago loses in regulation to Rockford, or they lose in overtime or shootout to Cleveland, and Chicago loses in overtime or shootout to Rockford. Tucson clinches a playoff berth if San Diego loses, regardless of whether it's in overtime or a shootout, versus Bakersfield. And Ontario clinches if they win at San Jose and San Diego loses in regulation versus Bakersfield, or they have a regulation win at San Jose and San Diego loses in overtime or the shootout versus Bakersfield. So, like, there's some complicated-ish clinching scenarios there, but by the time you listen to this, there could be six teams clinched for the playoffs. What I want to talk to you about, Corey, because I realize that I've been rambling for quite some time here, is the Hershey Bears are currently at a magic number of 13 to clinch. I don't know off the top of my head what the name for the AHL President's Trophy is, but
the Gregor Kilpatrick.
Thank you. I knew you would have it for me. They have a magic number of 13 to win that, which is a lower number than several teams have to even make the playoffs in the first place. How soon do you think the Hershey Bears clinch that Kilpatrick trophy?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think that the Bears are the most likely team to win. Obviously, there's, you know, a pretty decent gap just looking at the numbers on the next closest team. I think that's probably going to be more of a, you know, a down the road here kind of accomplishment for the Bears. Like, maybe, you know, the Bears will have to put in some work to, I think, reduce that number as well as get some help. I would say it's probably a last, you know, maybe a week or two away at the soonest. I mean, 13 doesn't seem like a huge number. I'd like to just see them wrap up the division. And, you know, we would be looking at a much lower number than 13 had the Bears won yesterday over Providence. That number is going to haunt for a little bit and be annoying for a little while in that respect.
Yes, I believe, but that would have taken their magic number down to 9.
Correct,
because it would
yes.
have been a four-point game. Just for context, the second place in terms of magic numbers to clinch that to clinch the AHL title is Coachella Valley, which has a magic number of 29. Right now.
Absolutely. And it's an interesting thing because, you know, you got a couple of teams that are close to them even. I mean, you can't fully rule out Milwaukee. Syracuse is kind of there, kind of not. You know, you got a couple of teams in the Pacific that aren't mathematically eliminated yet. I would anticipate that being just the sheer unlikeliness of another team clinching it. But, you know, for the Bears, they really need to get their act together to, you know, further win and reduce that number to 0. You know, as long as other teams are swinging, there's still a chance, I think. And, you know, next step is the division. They were talking about this a little bit pregame yesterday with the magic numbers that, you know, the Bears, you know, just are going to have to rely on getting some help out of town for a lot of these numbers here. You know, not that it's in jeopardy necessarily, but just, you know, I would say, especially with this race, it's a don't stop until it's clinched type of scenario, personally.
Yeah, 100%. I just went to look up the Hershey's remaining schedule. They are on the road for a decent amount of the rest of this season, if I'm being honest. They travel to Hartford on Saturday, I believe. Then they are at home versus Lehigh Valley, away at Iowa for two games, back home at Lehigh Valley, away at Wilkes-Barre-Scranton, home versus Wilkes-Barre-Scranton. And then they finish off the season at home versus the Charlotte Checkers twice. That's not the worst remaining schedule in the world. Like, they're done. They're done with Providence now. But Wilkes-Barre-Scranton third in the Atlantic, Charlotte fourth in the Atlantic. They've got a ton of Atlantic Division play still left. A lot of 4-point games in there. Although I do think that double series again, that doubleheader against Iowa is a very kind series to give them at this point in the season. Iowa is 6 points out of a playoff spot in the Central. They are 23-33-4-2 on the season with a points percentage of 4-1-9, and they need their magic number to make the playoffs is 29. So that feels like and again, never say never. We've seen weirder things, but that feels like a very easy 4 points for the Hershey Bears to go ahead and help them on their way to clinching that league title.
Sorry, just one more little anecdote about the Wild. It is interesting. The Bears played Iowa twice. I want to say that was back in like late November for that little series. Those are very close games. Now, I don't know it seems like Iowa's struggled. They've kind of kept the same pace-ish. The biggest takeaway I remember from that series was Todd Nelson saying that he believes that Iowa is ultimately a playoff team. And both those games were 2-1 games. So it could be closer with their playoff lives on the line. A lot of these teams, their playoff lives on the line and looking to make statements. I do think it's going to be a tougher schedule than maybe meets the eye statistically in some of these cases. So it'll be interesting to watch how that plays out.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it's worse playing teams that are kind of at that 3-4 seed in the playoffs where they're fighting for home advantage versus a team like Providence, for example, which, like, they're pretty locked in at second, I feel like. They're not going to jump Hershey, I don't think. They are 16 points behind Hershey with 10 games left, and then they are 8 points ahead of the third seed Wilkes-Barre-Scranton. So, like, they're probably pretty locked in at second, I feel like. But you've got teams like Wilkes-Barre-Scranton, Charlotte, Hartford, all pushing to kind of improve their seeding. So, like, would you rather play a team that is kind of already locked in, or would you rather play a team that is lower in the standings? And that's they've got a lot of mid-standings teams left that are, like you said, fighting to make the playoffs right now. So it could get a little spicy for Hershey down the stretch.
It should be some good pre-playoff action type of things. You get your best games from a team when they're desperate, I think. And, you know, some teams like Lehigh Valley have given the Bears trouble at times. Should the Bears be able to handle them? Yes, but, you know, that's why the games get played, is that, you know, it's nobody's really truly a pushover. Anybody, you know, parity's pretty good in the AHL. This isn't, how it was a decade and a half ago, I'd probably say, is what comes to mind, where there's some teams where it's like, all right, we're going to go bank our couple of points against, pre-the-record Norfolk Admirals type of thing, you know, or the Albany River Rats, or, you know, some of these teams that were just usually not so great. You know, they were just a place for
prospects. Just kind of there to be there, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not quite that way anymore. You know, we've seen the Bridgeport Islanders, the dead and buried Bridgeport Islanders, you know, ruin some chances for teams thinking that they were going to go get some free points here recently to, not quite have that, so to speak. So it'll be an interesting test for the Bears. And, you know, as I'll talk about here in a second, if the Bears can clean up their game a little bit, they should be in good shape, though, I think, overall.
Let's finish up this segment with some fun predictions. Obviously, by the time you guys listen to this, you will know what's happened. But as of right now, Corey and I do not know what's happening with the clinching scenarios. We're recording this at about 5 or 6 p.m. On Wednesday evening. You'll probably be hearing this Thursday morning. Corey, three teams can clinch: Grand Rapids, Tucson, Ontario. How many of them clinch? Who does it, do you think? Let's have some fun predictions.
Ooh, I was about to say, I think it's a pretty solid lock in my book that I think the Grand Rapids is probably going to punch their ticket officially. You could kind of pick on any one of these teams in the Pacific. I see, you know, the Pacific picture getting a little bit more clear as this weekend unfolds. You have some teams there that haven't played as many games as some others, maybe that they'll get out of the way type of thing, lock in their playoff spots. I could see obviously Tucson's right there. I mean, they just need a, you know, favorable bounce in one game to go to overtime with some, you know, without knowing all the matchups off the top of my head here. Could see Colorado making it here as well. It's a little bit stretched for Ontario maybe, but, you know, I think that there's some good chance that you could see a lot of the Pacific playoff picture become a lot clearer suddenly after this week.
Yeah, 100%. The only one, like Tucson, I think is the, of these three teams, Tucson is the only one that the playoff berth clinching is out of their control. So Grand Rapids and Ontario can both clinch it with a win. Ontario needs a little bit of help from Bakersfield, but Tucson, they clinch if San Diego loses. They're not playing tonight. What's interesting is that if Ontario wins tonight, they're currently fourth in the Pacific. They will jump Colorado, who are third in the Pacific and who are idle tonight and until Friday. So again, there's going to be, it's not out of the realm of possibility that the Abbotsford Canucks, who are seventh in the Pacific, could finish second. Like I said, there's only 7 points that separates second and seventh in the Pacific, because the Pacific Division is stupid and doesn't make sense in a very different way than the Central Division is being stupid and doesn't make sense. I had a long conversation with Andrea Rinaldi, our Grand Rapids and Chicago correspondent, earlier this week. But let's move on. And we'll take a quick break, and then when we get back, Corey is, I believe we've got a patented Swartz rant TM on the horizon. So we'll do that in just a second here on Cold as Calling. But first, I have got to tell you all about Betstamp. Sports betting has risen rapidly in popularity, and having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to maximize your profits, and there has never been a better time to sign up. Obviously, playoffs are coming right up, and that is where you make your money in sports betting. When you visit signupexpert.com/AHL, you're going to be connected to all of the sportsbooks in your regions, along with a review of each platform and its unique benefits. All of these sportsbooks have valuable different sign-up offers for new users. When you register through our link, you're automatically going to receive the best offer at each site. When you use multiple sportsbooks, you can ensure that you can always access the best available odds, which is the key to successful sports betting. If you want to take advantage of these benefits and support our podcast, please consider signing up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/AHL. Once again, that is signupexpert.com/AHL. Must be 21 or over, only valid in U.S. states and Canadian provinces where sports betting is legalized, and please gamble responsibly. Corey, I believe you have a grievance to air.
Well, Jay, it's an interesting one I have here for you today. I kind of call it penalties and why not to take them. And so I had a little bit of a rare occurrence this past week with my adult league team that I play on, which was I took my first minor penalty of our regular season. And I'm talking like this has probably been, we've been playing since like the beginning of January. So it's probably been...
So you were overdue is what you're saying.
Yes, I've been a good boy for most of the season. Let me just put it that way. I've been model citizen, but the guy tripped over my stick, you know, did the little run and fall and, you know, sold it. I'm pretty sure he did try to do like a snow angel or something like that to sell it to the referee. Referee was definitely against us in this particular game. But anyway, I had to sit and think about what I did for 2 minutes, and I felt very helpless while doing it. And so I got off the ice, and I was kind of, you know, I was reviewing my material here for the Bears. And Todd Nelson kind of had a great line that, you know, I thought tied into my play as well as to the Bears as a whole. And it's about the danger of taking penalties in the today's AHL. And so I was kind of looking at this from a couple of perspectives. You know, the Bears' perspective obviously is the first one that came to mind. Over the Bears' last three games, this is 180 minutes of play. They have taken 19 penalties in that span. So 19 penalties roughly translates to 38 minutes of penalties. They've spent 38 minutes of 180 total minutes on the penalty kill. And I don't care who you are, that's just brutal. You know, penalty kills, you've heard it said a million times by your favorite broadcaster, they kill your momentum. You have to, you know, you're in dangerous situations. You oftentimes get scored on. You know, it's hard. You know, the Bears, being even as good as they are, were not immune from being scored on as a result of all, you know, result of these penalties. And it cost them. It cost them big time. They took 8 penalties and 40 minutes worth of action on Tuesday against Providence. It was egregious. It was brutal. It was terrible.
That's too much crime. Like, exactly. I just pulled the game sheet for this. That's too much crime, Hershey.
Exactly. And, you know, Nelson had this great anecdote that I have to read to you because I thought it was absolutely phenomenal here. Where, so in describing his team's penalty minutes, I'm sorry, my quote machine that I had here is not loading up as fast as I would have liked it to. But I believe he said something basically to the effect of saying that he said, I told the guys I'm going to give, he said, you know, he described the penalties as penalties when your stick's not on the ice. And he said, I'm going to give the guys weighted sticks and I'm going to have them skate around with it for a few days of practice to make sure they keep their sticks on the ice. And I just kind of laughed at that. And I was like, too true. Like, you know, my penalty, I think I had the stick too much on the ice because it was maybe in the guy's feet a little bit too much. But, you know, the funniest part was that you compare the Bears here to a lot of different teams. I think it's kind of interesting because a penalty stat, it used to be much crazier in the old days of the AHL. The Bears are the second fewest penalty or penalized team in the AHL at 619 penalty minutes. If you want to go all the way up to the top of that list, it's the Tucson Roadrunners with 1,074 penalty minutes. So the Tucson Roadrunners have been bad boys.
Yes. I will say, you know, in defense of, that's less minor penalties and more just full-on, like, murder crime. They played the San Jose Barracuda the other day, and I believe there was, like, 100-plus penalty minutes handed out in the forms of game misconduct. There was a lot of airing of grievances, shall we say, in the third period of that game. But, like, that's too much crime, guys. Over 1,000 penalty minutes is too many penalties.
And it is interesting. Oh, man, I lost my stat here. Hold on a second. I'm just going to back it up a little bit. You know, it is interesting. You know, the most penalized teams in the league, it's a great spread. The top four nearly feature one team from every division. Tucson obviously has the lead. Laval's in second place. Lehigh Valley's in third. So you have three divisions represented there. And it goes back up north with Belleville. Calgary's in fifth place. You know, it's a great spread because you just kind of have that one team that, you know, seems to, by the data, clearly air their grievances more than other teams do. And so, you know, I hate to call these teams teachers' pets by any stretch, but, you know, you just have a great mixture of teams. It's not quite like the old days where, you know, you have a guy like, say, guy comes to mind right away is Joel Reklish, who, you know, will easily take up half of his team's penalty minute count almost by himself, basically. So it was just kind of a fun little stat dive I like to do. I plan to reform my ways and not trip anybody else for the rest of the season. Referees, if you ever catch wind of this and you're listening to me, call the other guy. He deserved it more than I did when I got tripped. And by the way, that goal that we scored was in. The puck was loose the whole time, and you just didn't see it. So maybe this is more of an airing grievances against penalties, but against refereeing in and of itself. And I bring that back to the Bears game because Todd Nelson had another really great quote about it. Because, you know, one of the grievances that was aired in yesterday's game happened in the second period where Ryan Hofer was hit up high in the jaw. And I believe there was concern if he had a concussion. And when no penalty was called, you know, Nelson kind of said, you know, said it, which I think sums up hockey players best, is that, you know, if it's the hit that the league wants out of hockey. And I believe he said that, you know, if the referees are going to protect the players are going to protect each other. And that's what kind of led to some of the extra shenanigans. I think the Bears maybe got penalized for a little bit extra. So there's a fine line to walk there. So, you know, as much as you want to strive for peace and, you know, tranquility. I always say in adult league games, we are not being paid to play. We are paying to play. You know, I do think that there's, you know, some onus on the league here maybe to, you know, consider some of these a little bit more, a little more thoroughly possibly. But, you know, again, I think it's just kind of an interesting, especially as it relates to, as we were talking about the playoffs, where you start to see some of these pre-playoff battles, like, you know, teams like the Bears are kind of shifting into divisional play. You could probably say that about most of the teams in the league, where they're shifting these teams they've played 10, 12, sometimes even more times with each other, where you're going to say, all right, this could be a playoff series down the line. I really want to see, you know, it'll be interesting to kind of watch within each game to see if that kind of boils over with some teams maybe that are falling out of playoff contention, as well as teams that are battling to stay in playoff contention. You know, they always play the songs after fights where it's, you know, you got to fight for your right to party, basically. So, you know, we're going to see if that maybe, you know, becomes a theme closer to the end of the season here as well. But that's my little ramble here at this point. And Jay, before I stop here, a little bit of breaking news from the Hershey camp here. Washington Capitals defenseman Ethan Bear was recently confirmed to have entered the NHL Player Assistance Program. And as a result, the Capitals, much to my immense chagrin here, have called up Matthew Phillips again, as well as Vincent Iorio from the Bears. We have a little bit of breaking news on the podcast here today. That's Vincent Iorio's first call up of the season. I've lost track of how many times Matthew Phillips has been called up and sent down in the last, like, 3 weeks. You know, guys, you know, got to be living out of a suitcase right now. So a little bit of breaking news.
He just got back from, was it Wilkes-Barre that he was with briefly?
He was with Pittsburgh, yes.
Yeah. So yeah, yeah, it's so been some travel.
Hershey's his third team. Third team in the last 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah, that's, again, like, it's kind of the life of an NHL player, but it must suck to, all right, I just got settled back in Hershey. Oh, well, guess I'm going to head back on over to DC. Welcome to Cleveland Monsters fans, Payne.
Absolutely.
We didn't really get a chance somewhere to touch on it in the podcast. I'm sure if Dino had been here, we would have done. But for an episode of Locked On Blue Jackets this week, we looked at the Monsters versus the Blue Jackets in terms of call-ups. And before they got Trefik Polanski back, seven of the top eight Monsters scorers this season are with the Blue Jackets currently.
So. Wow.
I was about to say, fine. Don't worry about it.
Somewhere, I'm
everything
sure
is fine in Cleveland. But
I'm sure somewhere Dina's probably saying this is karma for, like, last weekend where the Bears playing the Monsters, where they were so beleaguered and stuff like that. Yeah. But I don't think the Bears are going to be signing any ECHL PTOs anytime soon, at the very least. So at least we're that good still at this point. But we'll see how it unfolds.
I will say one more comment on the penalties, and then we'll probably wrap it here. Actually, no, I have a question for you that I'm gonna ask in a minute. I do like that of the 12 power plays that were handed out, five of them were roughing, or six of them, excuse me. There were six roughing penalties handed out, and I particularly liked Matt Strome's roughing penalty against no one, Drew Bavaro's roughing penalty against no one, and Vincent Arsenault's roughing penalty against no one. I always like it when a roughing penalty is handed out to just one guy, because who's he? Like, he's supposed to be roughing with someone. On that vague note, a player on my team got a fighting major, but was the only one that got a fighting major. So I don't know how you can just fight with
someone.
But I have a question for you to kind of finish off this penalty segment, and it's something that, again, happened in the game I was working this weekend. A player was tripped. They called the tripping penalty, and they also called the player for embellishment. How do you feel about that? Because I feel very, very strongly that if the player embellishes, it's not a penalty. Or if it's a legitimate penalty, then what does it matter if he embellishes or not? The penalty still happens, and it's frustrating. I don't believe in calling the double penalty plus dive. How do you feel about that?
I feel like it's a little situational at times. Like, I do think there's times where it's like, okay, this, I do agree with you largely, by and large, that, you know, player trips a player and this guy embellishes it, that it kind of, you know, implies kind of like almost a ground rule, right? That, like, you know, it wasn't really a trip, it was an embellished play type of thing. But I do think there's some situations where, you know, a guy might, you know, actually get a stick in his skate blade, you know, holder or something like that, goes flying, but maybe does the, you know, the swimmers type of, you know, paddle type of thing to fly through the air, you know, Supermans to, you know, take flight or something like that, where you're sort of like, okay, that was a trip, but you totally embellished that. I think that's fairly rare in most ways. Like, genuine trips, nobody sees coming and they fall, and, you know, it's pretty obvious. But I do think there's some situations where that's applicable and the right call, but I don't, I agree with you in that I don't really like that 90% of the time, because it's one of those situations where, you know, and like you said, like with the fighting thing, like, you know, one player gets fighting, nobody else does, is implied that it's that clip that went viral last year. I think it was of that kid
Oh,
from where
the dude
he's,
just fights like shadow boxing.
yeah, or he was just punching the air and, like, you know, doing a really good job of it. It was a great clip. I love that clip so much. That was the first place I went to when as soon as you said that, where it was like bros battling his inner demons or something like that. You know, it's one of those ones where you know, every referee is a little bit different, right? I feel, you know, back when I was a kid, you kind of had the gunslinger days of the old referees, where we just saw it. I believe it was last season when Terry Koharski retired. He wanted to have one of his last games in Hershey, and he's one of the old gunslingers, probably the last of them, really. Whenever they announced Terry Koharski, and they did for this game, you know, his last game, he gets booed mercilessly. He's one of those guys where, you know, from the moment they put his name on the scoreboard, he's getting booed. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, but each referee has their own style. And players, you know, Zach Fish always said it, you know, players respect the way he calls it because he, you know, explains his calls. Like, you know, apparently on the ice, he's a really great guy to work with, so to speak. But, you know, fans will never get over that sort of thing. So I maybe split this off into a little tangent about referees in a sense, but, you know, it's kind of getting that sense for how each official maybe interprets that rule a little bit type of thing, where I think there's just some variation. You almost have to settle in for that at times, especially in a game like Tuesday's, where it certainly was a referee heavy game. But on the flip side of that, you know, as Nelson kind of alluded to, there's some times where that can also similarly get out of hand because certain things are being called and certain, you know, certain things are getting not called, and it leads to some team feeling some kind of way about it. So, you know, there's certainly times where I think that balance and perfection is hard to attain sometimes. Like, I don't envy the referees' jobs. I'll just say
It's the
that.
toughest job, and I am guilty of yelling at the referees as well and getting mad at missed calls or soft calls or
Who among us is not?
right? Like that's it's the human condition. I couldn't do it. I couldn't be a ref. It's a tough job. You get the benefit of a hindsight, getting to watch the replay, and you also get to see the entire ice, whereas the ref is just looking in one place. That being said, I want to finish off, and I know this is your segment, but I do have a thing like, and this is sort of NHL focused, but also AHL focused. The referee doesn't hate your team. He's just not very good at his job. I feel like every
That's
single
fair.
fan base thinks that the refs are against them specifically, and it's just, that's just not how it works. And it drives me crazy every single time I see a team be like, "Whoa, it's us against the refs." I'm like, "No, the refs don't have it out for you specifically. They're just sometimes kind of incompetent." I'm not going to name names here, but
It's kind of
sometimes
like, you know,
that's just how
it's
it
kind of like
is.
your favorite retail thing you go to, where it's like, you know, you're sort of like, okay, like this, the service was slow, but like you sort of have to, you know, put yourself in their shoes and be like, okay, well, it's probably not that easy. Like, you know, be as polite as possible, I suppose. But the one thing I did
My
want to,
refereeing hot take is that they need an eye in the sky.
oh, I think that's true.
I think four you have four you have your four man system on the ice, and then I think you have someone up in the press box or like up above, and they get the they have the opportunity to discuss with the refs down on the ice, hey, you missed this call, or I think I th th there's definitely some kinks to be worked out in my Shark Tank pitch, so to speak. But put an extra ref there that has the ability to stop the game if there is a missed call or something like that. I know people get mad about slowing down the game, but the NHL has decided that you can do a coach's challenge for a delay of game puck over the glass now, which ironic that you're going to delay the game on a delay of game penalty. But we're getting kind of two in the weeds and two in the NHL here. So unless Corey has any more grievances to air specifically about the referee that gave him a penalty in his beer league game last night, I think we'll call it there. Corey knows what he did. He won't do it again. And he's very, very sorry.
I am. To be fair, the one thing that I would say is maybe my referee hot take is that I would like to see the AHL maybe get with the times a little bit in terms of having a review, or maybe, like, you know, maybe not necessarily all the way into coaches' challenges type of things, just because that can muddy the waters a little bit. But AHL technology has gotten so much better. I'd almost like to be able to see at least more in the veins of, you know, video review and some things that, you know, you end up having to chalk up to saying, well, it's the AHL. They don't have that rule in place like the NHL does. That'd be probably my hot take to see maybe change. You know, the AHL has some great new technology that everyone's kind of up to speed on. Not everybody's quite as good as each other type of thing, but I'd like to see that change in the future. So that's my hot take.
Yeah. I wonder if as the AHL continues to grow as a team, it'll be continues to grow as a league, they'll start putting in, like, these are the bare minimum standards for cameras around the rink or whatever, I think. Which I think we'll probably see in the next kind of 5 seasons or so. But sound off in the comments, I guess, if you agree with me and Corey about refereeing, if you think that we're wrong and that the referees hate your team specifically, feel free to sound off about that as well. That's going to be it for us here at Calder's Calling. If you want to check out our written coverage of the AHL, you can find us online at thecaldertimes.com. You can follow us on Twitter at thecaldertimes, all one word. We're also on Facebook. We're on YouTube, which, you know, if you're watching this episode, if you're listening to this episode, you can find us on YouTube. Go do that. You will get to see the cameo of the Mike Vecchione bobblehead, which took place earlier in this episode. And we're also on Instagram at the Calder Times as well. Please subscribe, rate our podcast, leave a review if you can, share it with your friends, family, neighbors, mailman, anyone that you think likes hockey or that you think could like hockey, share it with your coworkers, your dog, whoever. We'd also like to extend a final thank you to our sponsor, Document Doctors. Until next week, I hope your team wins, and we'll see you all next Wednesday.